Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with the anti-Muslim and anti-immigrant terrorist attacks at two mosques in New Zealand today, apparently by a group of at least three white nationalists, with 49 people killed in cold blood during Friday prayers. We will check in now with an imam here in our area for what he and how mosques around here are handling this today. Our guest is Imam Khalid Latif, University Chaplain and Executive Director of the Islamic Center at NYU. Imam Latif, welcome back to WNYC, and I'm so sorry it's under these circumstances.
Well, thanks for having me and for the opportunity.
Would you like to just describe first, just to tap into people who may be feeling similar ways to you, how the news of the attacks in New Zealand made you feel this morning, or what they made you think?
You know, I think the unfortunate dehumanization of Muslims around the world through globalized mechanism of Islamophobia has people forget at times that, you know, we're talking about the massacre of human beings. People who walk into a place of worship for their sole purpose of connecting to their spirituality and to the divine, and being met with bigotry and hatred in its worst of forms. And I think aside from the grief and anxiety that stems from attacks that are like this, you know, I think where the Muslim community is in the United States and globally is in a place of just wonder as to when there will come a time that this type of bigotry is named and understood and categorized in a way that demonstrates what it actually is rooted in. A lot of times we see people like this who are individualized and, you know, spoken about in terms of mental health issues and being lone wolves, so to speak. But the reality is that we have deep problem with white supremacist terrorism, and until we're able to call it out and recognize that the bigotry that stems from it is not only an issue of ethics and morality, but it is something that is quite lethal and has taken the lives of so many, even just in this last year, let alone if we look further back. And I think Muslims, like many other minority groups, are just in a place of wonder as to what has to happen next before somebody starts to actually call it out for what it is.
And listeners, we can take a few phone calls from any Muslim listeners. We will make this a particular invitation for Muslim listeners right now who feel like you want to say something publicly after the New Zealand terrorist attack. Maybe you're going to mosque today for Friday prayers. Maybe you're not. Doesn't matter. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692 with Imam Khalid Latif, University Chaplain and Executive Director of the Islamic Center at NYU, 212-433-9692. And this is Friday, so people will be going to mosques all over our area. How would imams leading these services be likely to engage them during Friday prayers, including yourself if you do that at NYU, or engage people in any other way?
We do. We have a Friday prayer service that, you know, if anybody is in the downtown area and would like to attend, we'd be more than happy to have you. We're also going to be hosting a vigil at 6 p.m. On the steps of our university student center. That would be open as well if anybody would like to attend and show support there. You know, I think what the messaging is going to be for many people today at mosques across New York City and really around the world is a message of just hope and a message of an understanding that tomorrow can be better. You know, I think also for myself personally, to let my constituents know that we have to get out there and let people know that this type of culture of hate and dehumanization, you know, is rooted in something, and that it's not a one-off instance that came out of nowhere. But until we start to deal with the actual roots of these ailments and illnesses, and allow for ourselves to be unapologetic in our identity and not let ourselves alter in the way that we choose to practice our faith based off of, this type of bigotry, we're going to get to a place where it continues to perpetuate itself. And I think to let people know that by no means do they bear the burden of responsibility that American society has placed upon them to lose their own sense of identity, and somehow each Muslim has to represent all of Islam and all Muslims at all times, and they lose their own name and narrative. But at the same time, recognizing that those who have the capacity to answer questions from many people who will be saying, how do we support right now, to let them know that their support is appreciated in the moment that we find ourselves in, but their support will also be necessary when they're deciding who they're going to vote into office tomorrow, or how they leverage their power and privilege to ensure that those who are underserved and underprivileged aren't met with this type of atrocity on a regular basis. And where we find these roots, that's attached to the anti-Muslim sentiment that is growing every single day in our country. And to me, it's also attached to anti-blackness, anti-Semitism, anti-LGBTQ mentalities, anti-immigrant, anti the undocumented. I mean, you could go through a list of minorities, but there are systemic and structural mechanisms that allow for these types of realities to exist. And if they continue to go unchecked, we're going to continue to see these types of things happen.
Imam Khalid Latif, University Chaplain and Executive Director of the Islamic Center at NYU, and now some of your calls following the horrible terrorist attacks that have left 49 people dead during Friday prayers at two mosques in New Zealand, apparently by three at least white nationalists. One of them posted a more than 70-page racist rant that police say they have obtained on that suspect. And Muhammad in Elmwood Park, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling, Muhammad.
Good morning, Brian. Salaam alaikum, Brother Khalid. I am saddened by the news of this onslaught again on Muslims. 49 Muslims were killed today, and had been a person of a different faith, we are all New Zealand. Where is the outcry from our politicians, our leaders, the world leaders? Our president didn't even extend condolences to the Muslim community here in the United States or in the world.
He did. He's done other things, but he did express condolences and horror at this.
Are we all New Zealand today, or are we just these are Muslims? There will be a new media cycle that will just vanish, and we'll go about our business and not call these acts terrorism. Our terrorism is specifically made just for one particular color or race.
Thank you very much for making what is a very valid point. With respect to Trump, I don't know if you've seen this story yet, Imam Latif, but USA was reporting that President Trump used Twitter last night to promote an interview in which he explained how tough his supporters could get, and then deleted the tweet this morning after the New Zealand mosque shootings. In his chat with Breitbart News, Trump said, quote, "I can tell you I have the support of the police, the support of the military, the support of the bikers for Trump. I have the tough people, but they don't play it tough until they go to a certain point, and then it would be very, very bad." So I guess he tweeted that out, and then he deleted the tweet. What's your reaction to that?
Look, I mean, Trump is definitely a big catalyst of this issue. One of these attackers in New Zealand had a manifesto that directly cited President Trump as being an inspiration for what it is for him to move forward in these heinous acts of terrorism. I think, though, what we have to understand is that Trump can also become a deflection point, that if we say that he in himself is the entirety of the problem, we're again not really getting to what the crux of the problem is. We live in a country that has had a problem with race since its very inception. And if we're not in a place where we're able to recognize that and see how many of the institutions that dictate how the society functions on a whole is rooted in that supremacist mindset, and it allows for the perpetuation of imagery, narratives, policy, both domestic and foreign, that in large part infringe on the rights and day-to-day living of minorities of all backgrounds. Definitely the way this president functions is in a way that if any person is now living in denial of the issues of race that we have in our country, let alone in a lot of parts of the world, I don't know what else you would need to see in order to say that there's a deeply entrenched anti-blackness that builds upon itself in ways that festers and fosters this type of hate. And I think what you'll find is that there won't necessarily be a system of checks and responsibilities, that we're going to have individuals who live in the political world that are going to be able to make decisions through their frame of privilege until a mass movement takes place that says these are things that are just not acceptable. They're not the standards through which we want to live in, and we will use our voices to call out this type of inequity. Long before Donald Trump did we see movement in the Republican Party to really embrace like nationalism, and within that white nationalism, anti-Muslim sentiment was a campaign platform for pretty much every candidate for the presidency in the Republican Party in the last presidential election cycle. And what we find ourselves in on the other side, in the Democratic system, or the Democratic Party rather, is kind of a strategy that says, well, are Muslims to us a liability or an asset? And where it becomes a liability to share voice and speak voice, there's a certain silence and a certain quietness. We saw this with Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, who was getting railed into by so many different people. And unless, or if not for a movement of well-intentioned citizens that called for the resolution that Congress sought to pass, essentially deepening kind of the vilification of this congresswoman, to say, no, we need a broader language that, speaks out against hatred in all of its forms, you would see many Democrats in a place where they were thinking about, well, how will our support be seen in terms of, you know, our next election cycle, the power that we retain, you know, what it is that will keep us in the office. Then these are problematic things beyond anything, and they all play a role in getting us to a place where these shooters feel justified and validated to commit the heinous acts of terrorism that they committed.
Yusuf and Elizabeth, you're on WNYC. Hello, Yusuf.
Hello, how you doing? Assalamu alaikum, Imam.
Alaikum salam.
I wanted to call because I wanted to build on the earlier point just now about you said that Trump is not the only cause, and I agree, but he's giving them a leadership because, for example, if an imam was giving khutbahs, which are sermons for us, and certain people committed acts and they said they were motivated by that imam would probably be arrested under the Patriot Act, you know? And I'm not accusing Trump of motivating these people. The people themselves are saying he motivates them. From Richard Spencer, Charlottesville, Tree of Life, the serial bomber, this individual, they're saying he motivates them. You understand? So what is going to be done to address his flirtation with Islamophobia? I'm not saying he motivates them. The people committing these acts are saying he motivates them. So how are we going to address this? Because he's providing leadership for them. He's the leader of the free world, and he's giving them a motivation. Because that's what they're saying.
Imam Latif?
Yeah, I agree 100%. But I think the challenge is when we deal with systemic and structural modes of racism, what people look for is an excuse to not deal with the bigger and broader issue. So where a good number of people, right, arguably a majority of people, will say Trump is the problem, absolutely, I would say Trump, albeit being a large part of the problem, especially where we are today, is still just a part of a bigger issue that is white supremacy. And until we start to recognize that we have a problem with white supremacist terrorism on a global level, and definitely in the United States, we're going to see that it's going to continue to perpetuate itself. And there are elements of it that are quite hidden, elements of it that are very much deep and in your face. But we have to call it out for what it is so that we can start to dismantle it. The goal is for us to recognize and come together in a way that says that people of all backgrounds should not simply be tolerated, but respected and celebrated in their right to live the life that they choose. And my concern is that if we get into a place where we say Trump is the problem, then when he's gone, we're not going to be in a place where we've readied ourselves to deal with everything else that has existed for now literally centuries, and likely will continue to exist if we're only pointing fingers at the symptoms of the deeper issues and not addressing the issues themselves.
Issa in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Issa.
Hello, Brian, and hello, Imam. So basically, I was hearing everything that Imam was saying, and I understand like our political spectrum is really messed up, but it has been, and I think we as Muslims, what we need to do is to unite more, especially in these horrible times, and it's hard for everyone, as we saw it just happened to the Jewish community, and hopefully it will not happen here in the United States towards the Muslims as it happened in New Zealand. But basically what I'm saying is that it's better just kind of stay united, even though like it's hard times, just better to try to change the way that we see things and, yeah, just like stay united and just try to be more helpful to one another, mm-hmm. either as Muslims or not Muslims. That's all, and I thank you so much for this show, Brian.
Issa, thank you so much for your call. And let me get your thought on that, Imam, and then I'm going to invite you to mention the vigil tonight again before you go. But, you know, there's terrorism in the world today that comes in the name of whiteness, as we've seen so horribly today, that comes in the name of Islam, that comes in the name of other things, and yet people seem so divided. To Issa's call for unity, is a unified response to hate and ethnic or religious murder possible?
A unified response to hate can be something that we push ourselves towards at this point, but it can't be something that is just temporary or superficial or surface level, because we can stand with people in their times of needs and struggle in a way that's about us satisfying ourselves and the anxiety that we feel when we don't really know what else to do. Or we can let our standing be something that's in the true sense of solidarity and allyship, where we go and stand with people consistently and understand their struggles from their voice and take cues from them as to how we can stand with them in moments that are like this, as well as moments that will exist beyond this time. And I think that's where we have to really push ourselves towards, to recognize that that unity has to be a unity not of the external, a unity of shared race, shared class, shared ethnicity, but a unity that is attached to a uniformity of the internal, shared values, shared hearts. You know, a lot of people have reached out to me at this time, which I'm greatly appreciative of, saying, you know, we're thinking of you and we're sending you our prayers and our thoughts and, you know, tell us how can we help you heal? And my response to them with a deep love and a deep admiration is, I'm not what's in need of healing because I'm not what's broken. The systems and structures that we see around us that are governing policy, rhetoric, all kinds of things that allow for this type of sentiment to be pervasive and ingrowing are the kind of things that we have to start to address. And it's going to necessitate people understanding, well, if you want to stand with someone in their moment of need, it might require you to have to give up a little bit of the comfort and privilege that you have access to, so that we're able to create an equitable and just society for people of all walks of life and all backgrounds.
Imam Khalid Latif, University Chaplain and Executive Director of the Islamic Center at NYU. Do you want to shout out the time and place of that vigil again?
Yeah, if people are in the Manhattan area, we're going to be meeting at 6 p.m. tonight at New York University's Kimmel Center. It's at 60 Washington Square South. We'd love to have anybody who wants to show support and solidarity to stand there with us. So please do come out 6 p.m. tonight at New York University's Kimmel Center.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.